Hey, friends, I just wanted to talk to you for a few seconds. We're going to get into the content soon. But if you're new to the show, we just want to invite you to subscribe. We're trying to see 2025 be a year of growth and expansion. We just need people like you to subscribe to our channel and to share about the episodes that you just are totally in love with on social media. And then lastly, if you can leave us a review today, we'd greatly appreciate it. The algorithms will appreciate it. And so thank you so much for joining us on the Marriage After God podcast. And I just pray that you enjoy this content. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Marriage After God podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith. Today's episode, I think you're going to really like it. It's with Mike and Holly Worley. They run a ministry, a marriage ministry called Spark Discipleship. And they use the mistakes that they've made in their own marriage to help other couples thrive in theirs. The three mistakes that we walk through are not being close and connected in a church, not walking closely with community, true biblical community, and also not seeking out mentorship from older couples. And so their Spark Discipleship ministry is about helping marriages thrive by working on those three things. They have three children. They've been married for 16 years. They had issues in the beginning of their marriage. Holly talks about abuse that she dealt with and how Mike and her walked through those early in their marriage. It was a very, very insightful, very beautiful conversation. I pray that it blesses you. So please enjoy my conversation with Mike and Holly Worley. Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Marriage After God podcast. Today, I have Mike and Holly Worley. Welcome to the show, guys.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, Mike, we've known each other in various ways. How long now?
Dude, I think it's been...
Since... Were you a part of Sevenly somehow?
Yeah. With you and Dale. So, I don't know, maybe like 10, 12 years or so? Was it longer
It's been a long time. About 12 years, because we've been in Central Oregon now for that amount of time. And I left Sevenly to move up here, so...
Right before that.
That's crazy. Well, and then we've stayed connected in various ways, just in like different like marketing avenues and just phone calls. And so it's been really cool to have you on or have you in my life. And we just recently reconnected through some business stuff, which you're helping me with. But I found out that you and your wife were doing some cool things. So I thought I'd have you both on the show. But why don't we start off with just sharing with the audience who you guys are, how long you guys have been married, how many kids you guys got, and what's your story, you know?
Yeah. So Mike and Holly Worley, we have been married, we're high school sweethearts and have been married over 16 years now. So we've got three kiddos, we homeschool those kids, our kids.
Amen.
We do have a ministry, we have a couple different businesses in all, and yeah, just very, very passionate. Our passion is to make disciples and to really teach others how to be able to make disciples and how to do that together as a couple.
Yes. All of our kids have recently had birthdays, so they would not be happy if we didn't tell you their new ages, because it's always a big deal, right? So we've got oldest is a girl. She's 11. Her name's Eliana. And then we have Michael, who's 8, and then Ralphie, who is 5.
Yeah.
Awesome. Our oldest is Elliot. he's turning 13 at the end of the year.
So awesome.
Yeah, pretty close. How long did you guys have you been married?
16 years.
16 years. We just had our 18. So you guys are like right there with us story-wise and timeline-wise, which is awesome.
We're like in tandem.
But you said you're high school sweethearts. So that means married 16 years. But how long have you guys known each other?
Yeah.
Much longer.
Yeah. So we've known each other for 22 years. Yeah. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. Together for 20 of them. So it's fun because we've done more life with each other than we have without each other, which is kind of a really fun thing for us.
So we really grew up together, I would say, and we met at church camp. So you can still find your true love at church camp. We won't tell our kids that, but it is the truth.
Do you think that's still true today? I mean, maybe 20 years ago was different times.
Yeah, that's exactly. Very true. Exactly. But yeah, we grew up together, ended up getting married right after college, and we both went to Bible school. And Holly, we were in Chicago. Holly was finishing up, and then we moved back to Colorado to be closer to family and all. So.
Awesome. Yeah, not many people have a story of being high school sweethearts and knowing each other for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. Love that story. We have actually a couple in our church that they are also high school sweethearts. They've known each other just as long as you know, longer than being alone.
Yeah.
But they have like 8 kids. So they're in a different category.
Yeah, that's a whole different
than most of us. But the high school sweetheart thing is such a beautiful thing. Not many have that story, like I was saying. But what was your guys' upbringings that kind of allowed you guys to have kind of that relationship that led you to where you're currently at now? Did you guys both grow up in Christian homes?
That's a great question. So I grew up pastor's kid in a Christian home. I'm the oldest of now 8 kids, so big family. Parents had 5 biological and then 3 foster care kids that came on later on that they adopted. And yeah, amazing grace-filled home, full of the gospel and everything. So when we met, like I was in a place that I had just rebelled actually and walked away from Jesus and had come back to Jesus and was recently baptized and on fire for the Lord. And when I met Holly, so it was kind of like a newer thing. It was the only even summer camp I went to was that year, in all, but then you can share about your family.
Yeah. My story is a little different. Come from a very religious home. So we did go to church every week, but it was very much do these rules, don't ask questions, look a certain way, act the part.
Yeah.
And so when I met Mike, I was super intrigued, thinking if he was a pastor's kid, he'd be a really, really cool kid to hang out with. And my dad reminded me that sometimes the pastor's kids are the worst ones. but that wasn't true.
Yeah.
As I started hanging out with Mike and getting to know his family, I started to see, gosh, there's more to Jesus than following rules and do's and don'ts. There's a relationship component here. Mm-hmm. And so I started to not only fall in love with Mike, but his whole family for what they showed me, what true relationship with Jesus looked like. And so I wanted that more than anything from what I had come from of just my background is abuse, abandonment, neglect, but all pushed under the rug where nobody would have known that was my story.
Wow. So both very different backgrounds, one very religious and structured and strict, and the other one semi-religious, you know, being a pastor.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, we were very, very gospel driven, but it was very grace-filled, right? I mean, we went, I can't remember a time we didn't have small group in our house. I grew up, my dad was a youth pastor growing up, so we had youth kids at our house all the time that they were discipling and loving on and growing on. So it was just kind of, our family was actually called to ministry. It wasn't my parents' thing. It was like our family's.
You all did it together.
Mission and vision. So it was very, it was just part of life. I didn't know anything different. And now, in hindsight, it's like, oh my gosh, this was like the greatest gift ever to grow up in and to have that story, right? So when we started to get to know each other, I mean, I remember we were driving and on I-25 playing this game, like, hey, things that you wish that you don't know about me that you should know. And I was like, I like the San Francisco Giants. And Holly's like, oh, my favorite color is pink. And I'd be like, oh, you know, I love skiing. You should know that. And then Holly was like, well, you should know I was abused as a kid. And I'm like, all right, tell me a little bit more about that. And that was actually the first time, I didn't know this at the time, but that was actually the first time that Holly had shared about her abuse as a kid to someone. And also, I thankfully was like, hey, yeah, we should go talk to my parents about this and kind of process this together. And drove straight to my parents' house and was like, hey, I think we need to have a conversation and all. But that was kind of the start of our relationship and kind of building, being authentic with each other and walking through that with each other.
Holly, that I couldn't imagine what that would have felt like. What led you to, what prompted you to do that? I know that you guys were playing that game, but were you guys dating right at that point already?
Yeah, we were dating at that point. And I, to be honest, because it was something that happened in my childhood. So at that point, it was 10 years past, 8 years past, kind of when everything closed and the abuse was done. I think I had shoved it down so much that it didn't really have, it was not something I ever talked about, didn't really think about, but it didn't have any emotional attachment to it. It just became something that was there. And I think looking back now, I was finally in a place where I felt safe with somebody and it came up and it almost came up, like Mike said, like it was no big deal. Like I had just kind of gotten to a place where I was like, yeah, this is just my life. Like this is what I've dealt with by a few men now by this point that we had met. So it just, for me, was almost like speaking out a part of my, what I believed my identity was, because it had happened so many times by different people. So
Mike, did you like almost swerve when she dropped that?
Well, it was interesting because she said it like so nonchalantly. And I was like, hey, was thanks for sharing that. Like, that's kind of a big deal. And she's like, oh no, you know, I'm like, no, it's kind of a big deal. We should like, you know, there's no pressure, but we should talk to my parents about that. Cause I just want to make sure one, you're okay. And like that, if there's anything we can do to help and support and care, knowing that there's going to be healing that has to come from. And so I think that that was maybe, well, you can say how that maybe was different or felt, because
I look back and I know that there's studies on when you finally speak up about your abuse and like one of the first people you tell in their response will kind of determine how your healing goes. Right. And unfortunately, a lot of women and men, when they speak up, are not believed. And so then that just creates this uphill battle. I mean, no matter how it comes out, it's still an uphill battle. But for him, he just listened and then was caring for me and then was like, let's get help. Let's find somebody else. And as a, at that time, 16 year old, I was like, oh yeah, whatever. But now I can see how like God used that to gently help me start the healing process.
This was not part of things I was going to be discussing, but I feel like this is very important to kind of dig in a little bit on. What about Mike made you feel safe so that you could share?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the reasons why I think I was like initially attracted to Mike was because I kind of watched when we met at summer camp originally, I had kind of watched him care for other people. Like I was kind of just sitting back watching and he was caring for other people. And then I started to see him like, oh, I actually am a man of God, which in my world, I had no, there was no framework for like what that looked like. It's not the home I grew up in. It's not the kind of dad I had. And so as I kind of watched him choose different things that showed integrity of, oh, I'm going to tell the truth here. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to respect you. I'm not going to treat you like all those other men had. I think for me, that's when I started to go, oh, this is somebody that I can trust. And he's not just saying he loves Jesus. Like he's actually living that out by respecting me and even some of the boundaries that he's putting in place and being in a friendship with me or a relationship with me. So.
Wow. So I think that's important for us, my listeners, because you never know. Like there, I'm sure there's people that they're married and their spouse had abuse in the past, and they probably still never brought it up. Mm-hmm. And not that you should. I don't know if you should necessarily go, "Hey, have you been abused before?" But being aware of how we are, the example that we lead, and are we a safe person for our spouse? And I love what you're saying, Holly, about the safety of Mike came from how he was being toward others, how he was treating you, how he was showing his Christ-like ness to you, that he was walking in an example that you're like, oh, I like that example. Mm-hmm. He has integrity. He is trustworthy. He is safe. And each one of us need that, because I don't think we realize that. I think sometimes we just walk in the example that we saw growing up, and we just kind of operate in them. We think that's normal. And sometimes it's not. Well, it may be normal, but it's probably not right. And being a safe person, because you never know when that moment might come up, or maybe you haven't been the person yet to be a safe place for your spouse to open up to you or your kids. Yeah. And making sure that you are walking that way. That's really good to be considering as people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a hard thing to probably talk about.
Let me just add to, like, this was, I mean, I was 17. I was a self-centered bonehead. So it was probably only by God's grace that I didn't do or say something, to be completely honest. But what was interesting was we then, you know, dated for
four and a half years
after that, got married. And we naively thought that because we had gone through so much, Holly had gone into counseling and had got help.
Had confronted at least one of my abusers by that point. So felt a lot of healing and freedom. Yeah,
we felt a lot of healing and everything. But then we said, I do. We got married and we were like, oh, we've got this, you know, this has kind of been solved, figured out. And after saying I do, it almost like intensified, I would say, in a different way. And our first like couple years of marriage were extremely hard. And I would say, honestly, the primary component of that was the abuse that Holly had gone through. So it wasn't kind of like this one and done conversation. It was years of walking through patiently, healing, and then seeing God, I would say, renew and restore and heal in a way that we didn't even think was comprehensible, honestly, because we were in a dark spot, you know, early on in our marriage. Mm-hmm. So I will just put that is it was not an easy thing to walk through, and God can, and he did. But it was a longer journey of mm-hmm. walking through that together.
Let me ask, what was some of the things in you, Holly, that, and I could probably guess, but I wouldn't be accurate. What do you think changed from being Holly single to Holly married, Holly the wife, mm-hmm. that you feel maybe intensified some of those, that abuse and that past trauma?
Yeah, I made a covenant to a man to give all of myself to him. And then I was like, whoa, wait. I've spent the last, you know, we got married when I was 21 years having to protect myself. And even before we were married, that was okay to do. And now I have to like give all of me to you. I have to trust you 100%. Just all these things that felt just so off of what I was used to doing. And so I just remember I would literally out loud tell him, I'm sorry, I'm broken. So like, this is as good as it's going to get for you. I'm sure he loved hearing that. Yeah. And so I think for me, it was just that reality of when God's vision for marriage is oneness, mm-hmm. oneness only comes when you're truly authentic and the other person gets all of you, the good, the bad, the hard. And so where Mike was trying to say, this is now our issue that like, I want to help you with. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I've carried it my whole life. I can't, I've made so many agreements with myself that I couldn't at the beginning, like let him in to like fully be able to hurt me, fully be able to see me and all of the devastating fact, like just ways that had come out in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mike, how did you, it sounds like you wanted to help, but what was that process like for you?
Oh man. Well, I would say I thought I was the, you know, knight in shining armor, rescuing the princess and who's going to slay all her dragons and protect her and everything. And so I think when all that happened, I was like, oh man, I'm in trouble. And I would say my first, to be completely honest, Aaron, I think what was so hard for me was I felt like I was paying the consequence of somebody else's sin. And like the hurt, like, so for example, she was self-protecting because of the hurt that she had received from somebody's sin. So like, and I'm like, man, I didn't do this. Like I didn't hurt you this way. I didn't do. So for me, what I really, really had to do was like in introspectively of understand, okay, how did Christ love the church? And as a husband now, how am I supposed to love this bride and care for her and also not be the one who has all the answers and who's Mr. Fix-It Man and has all the solutions. So for me, it took a place of me having to become humble and having to humble myself and honestly just starting to like, really, if I truly believe that only Jesus can change the heart, then it's bringing my wife to his throne and asking and encouraging, trying to create an environment where she feels safe, where she can receive healing and God can move. But that's like it can happen like this. Usually though, it's slow and it's a process. It's walking through together. So we spent we spent our kids' child, you know, college fund on counseling. Like we have been through good and bad counselors and have had been the recipient of amazing counseling in all that way. But it was a journey that we had to walk through. And I also just had to realize it wasn't something that I could move and fix and, you know, for her. So I had to walk alongside with her through her healing process and all that way.
I love that honesty of feeling like you're paying the price for someone else's sin. And that is the reality of sin, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when we make choices, when we sin, there is going to be consequences and it's going to affect other people. Mm-hmm. And you were paying the price of someone else's sin, but mm-hmm. you were doing it with your spouse. And yeah. I think that's something that we often need to remember in our marriages, mm-hmm. is that this, whether we like it or not, whether we agree with it or not, whether we asked for it or not, that's our bride or that's our husband, and we've promised to walk with them and be with them in those things. And the conversation I was just having with another couple, and they just were bringing up this idea like, well, we're one now, and we're supposed to bear each other's burdens, like that her burden is my burden, his burden is my burden. And so having that perspective, but I can totally relate to that feeling probably of anger or bitterness of like, what, why do I tried everything. I did everything right. Why am I having to pay this price now?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, and that's what it's a call of surrender too, of like, the Lord's like, hey, I want this part of you in all as well. And Jesus is one that who can empathize with us as well, because I have this little pain in the midst of that. He's carried an immense more, right, of that. So it's a picture of the gospel in the midst of that for sure.
Well, and something to realize also is that even though we feel like we're paying the price for someone else's sin, in reality, like, Christ actually paid it. Yeah. we're experiencing some of it.
Yeah.
So when we talked last, because we kind of met up before this conversation, you mentioned three big mistakes you guys made.
Yeah.
Would you just walk through those mistakes and how did you overcome them?
Yeah. So early on in our marriage, these three big mistakes, so we're going through healing, trying to figure this thing out. But I'd say the first big mistake, we went to church. We were even part of a church plant, but we weren't, I would say, mm-hmm. committed to the local church, and we weren't serving. We weren't, in a community of other believers, which what I'd say, like, the second was we didn't have true authentic community. Yeah. Like our community actually was like my soccer buddies from that I played college soccer with. And we were the first ones.
Not great marriage advice. Not I'm great just marriage tell advice. You.
Love those guys to death. They're still, you know, my band of brothers and guys I'm super close to. But yeah, they were not that helpful on the marriage advice. So we weren't committed to the local church. We weren't in an authentic community. And then we didn't have an older couple pouring into us. We didn't have those that were helping, that were further along and that had a marriage like what we wanted. And we just didn't have that. And later on, we found how important that was. But yeah, now we try to, you know, this is part of why we even started a ministry to couples and to married couples is because this was such a vital part of our story and seeing, man, when you're committed to the local church, you're building authentic community and you have older couples pouring into you, God moves and shapes and builds your marriage in a special way.
I think we love to open up the space too, because first few years of marriage, we thought this is as good as it gets. Like we believe that lie completely of just, this is your honeymoon phase. This is when you feel the most in love. This is when nothing is wrong. And so because we believe that lie, it led us to not seek out the help. It led us to just kind of, when all that abuse started resurfacing, just kind of sit there. Because I was like, none of our peers are experiencing this. When in reality, they probably all were in different ways from different things.
Yeah.
And so that's like our heart and passion behind what we do now is, you know, these couples, they're like, great, so let's meet before we get married. And then we're like, great, we'll meet you like 2 to 3 times before you get married. And then let's meet after. And they're like, no, we'll be fine. And we're like, okay. And so literally like 6 weeks in, they're always all like, thank you so much. We are like struggling here and here. And so it's been cool to see how God just used that to now let us just go, it's okay. Like, it's okay to be honest here. It's okay to say you're struggling in this area and let us just help you with what we've learned so far. So.
Yeah. So you mentioned the first mistake was not being involved in the church. Like you were going, there's many Christians that go to church. Yeah. They don't participate. They're not, their hearts aren't in it. So why was that a mistake? I want to dig into this because there's a lot of Christians who do this.
Yeah.
So what was the mistake about going to church but not being a part of the church?
I think one major part of this, and I feel like this is a huge part of like just even the evangelical church globally right now, is we're set to just be consumers where we sit and consume a message. We sit and consume worship. Maybe we sing a couple songs. Maybe we show up to, you know, an event or something, but everything's about consumption. And really, like, that's not like the Great Commission. That's not what we've been called to as believers. Like, we've been called to go therefore make disciples, you know, baptizing them, teaching them all that Jesus taught. And so for us, it was like almost missional alignment. There, like, we were not missionally aligned. We were just like consumers consuming. And we weren't actively serving, pouring in, leading, being part of the community, but also like being on mission with the Great Commission, I would say.
We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron.
Another lie that fed into that living that way was, oh, we're newly married. We need to work on our marriage. Like, we need to work on us. So let's make sure we have all the time to go to brunch and to have all the conversations. Well, the reality is we needed somebody else in that conversation. We needed that older couple to go out with after church on Sunday that we respected to sit down. And we finally did get that years later. That's like the beauty of just watching my husband grow as a leader over the years when I saw that he was starting to be discontent with, this isn't working. We have to be a part of the church. And then I watched him encourage me and like us step out and get involved. And then I watched him watch other marriages and then find those that he respected and was like, hey, can my wife and I come over and hang out? And so as I watched him start to do that, it meant a lot to me to see him pursue those things. And then to have those couples, because by the time we got to that place where it was, we did have community, we could have some of those conversations around the table that we would fight for hours just going around and around. But then when you add another couple in there who's giving you another lens to look at it through, or they said the same things Mike would say, I'd be like, that makes so much sense. And then Mike would be like, I told you that. And I'm like,
we had that conversation yesterday.
Sounds better coming from them. And so, yeah. So I want to say, like, over the years, I mean, now being married for 16 years, we've been in some amazing churches. We've been in some churches that we've acquired a lot of hurt from, but our commitment to each other and to the Lord is we'll never stop being a part of the church. Because we want what's important to the Lord, and we believe that that's service from us. And so there might be times where there's been some hurt and we got to kind of take a step back for a second and just get some help and heal through that. But we never want to leave the bride. Like, we want to be a part of the church.
That's good. Do you think that there are people in the church, Christians, who are exempt from that? Or do you feel like that's everyone's call, everyone's mandate?
Well, I mean, it does say in Hebrews, like, do not forfeit gathering together as is, you know, accustomed to many. So I don't, now here's the thing, like how, like our ecclesiology of how we define the church and what we look at, like it can be a house church, you know, we do a simple church in our home with other couples and everything. We're also a part of, you know, the simple church is part of a bunch of other simple churches in the greater Denver metro area. And we all meet on Sunday morning and it's more of a traditional, you know, kind of church. So, but how we define church, I think, too, is it, you don't have to be sitting in a Southern Baptist pew to be doing church. So,
yeah. But the reason I ask that is because there are some people that they think they can just have, you know, them and Jesus and they don't need other believers. And I just, whatever the building looks like or whatever the structure looks like, the fact that we need each other is global and universal. It's the when you become a part of the bride, you're part of the body and you can't just, you know, a finger sitting over on the floor over there is not a part of the body. It's not alive anymore. And that's why I was asking that. So you said the second thing you guys did mistake was not having close, community.
Yeah.
Not having close, how'd you just, it was a community. Is that how you defined it?
Yeah,
talk through that.
Yeah, I would say like community of like other, even other couples though, that were not even that had to be the same stage that we were at, but like we didn't have other couples, you know, it was all my single buddies that was our quote unquote community. Mm-hmm. So, and we didn't have that.
And I think the word community, people toss it around so much. And so
it's a buzzword.
What we really mean with community is for us, it's finding those that want to walk the straight and narrow and then walking it together. So like just a real tangible example is this week. So Mike said, we homeschool our kids. So I got 3 kids I'm homeschooling. I help run some women's ministry at our church. And so I'm speaking and we're doing a huge conference on Saturday for the first time ever. So this week I got to the point where I was like, I am tired. I am done. I am overspent. I have no strength to do any of this. And my kid can't tell me if it's a B or a D. Like, what am I doing here? You know, like, that is a hard one. That is a tricky one, but so I happened to be at the church for a meeting, and then afterwards I was just in the auditorium kind of praying for this weekend coming up, and I like hit my knees and just started crying, and I was like, I can't. I don't have enough strength to do this. I feel like I'm failing. And like, as all of the, as I'm being honest before the Lord and all the lies are coming down, but I'm fleshing them out, I have a hand that touches my back. That's one of my closest friends who I would mm-hmm. say I'm walking life with. And she just starts praying the strength mm-hmm. of Jesus over me. Mm-hmm. And so she's doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm confessing my sin. And then another friend comes over from the other side and puts her hand on my back. And she starts just like canceling any attack of the enemy on me. And so mm-hmm. for me in that moment, I was like, this is community. Like this is like when I'm at my worst, at my lowest, when I'm like, I have this job and I want to do it and I'm a disciple, but I forget my identity for a second. I've got my friends to rush in and kind of just pick me up and help me give it back to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And like, since that moment of them praying over me, like all my joy has been restored for everything I'm doing. I'm excited. I am grateful that I have them. And I think to your point is when people go, it's just me and Jesus. Mm-hmm. I could have had a beautiful moment with Jesus and confessed mm-hmm. my sin and been like, all right, I'm ready to go pick myself back up. But that moment meant so much more to me because I had others mm-hmm. doing it with me. So.
Amen. And you're so right. This story you guys have of being married, the struggles in the first few years of marriage, and then finding community and realizing the power of it. Is exactly Jennifer and I's story. We felt so alone in all of our struggles. We felt so alone in our frustrations and bitterness and anger. And it wasn't until we started walking with other believers, other marriages who were fighting for us and praying for us and commiserating with us, you know, letting us vent at times and then venting to us but then reminding us of the truth. And it was that saved our marriage. Of course, it was Christ, but leading us to his bride, leading us to himself in the church and as a whole, and not allowing us to just be autonomous islands drifting off, you know, into the abyss, but drawing us in and close into actual biblical community, not my CrossFit buddies and not my, you know, your soccer buddies, which they're all probably still friends, but there's something different about walking with like-minded believers. I just keep thinking of that scripture that says, you know, bad company corrupts good morals. I mean, you're walking with people that don't understand, don't have the same convictions, don't have the same values, don't have the same mission. Like, where are they going to lead you? Yeah. They're not going to understand your concerns and your issues. They're not going to care about the solutions that are going to matter to both of you and your family as a whole. So it's something that all of us need to be considering. All of my listeners, if you're not walking with other believers, like, you need to get in community. I'm not talking about just finding people that you like to hang out with necessarily, because sometimes walking community is not fun. It's hard. It's like, oh, they get to see all my mess and they're actually, you know, rebuking me right now. That's not fun.
Yeah.
But they're doing it out of love and they're doing it because they care about you and they want to see fruit and sanctification. And so amen for that. So this last issue that you brought up, this mistake you made not having mentors, this is a hard one because I know how valuable it is, but it's hard sometimes when there isn't one. There isn't any mentor. So why don't we talk about just your journey of seeking out mentorship, what that looks like, how maybe any of us listening could try and do the same thing, and then we'll transition into your ministry because that's kind of where this leads to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so for us, we were kind of at this place. We knew we needed an older voice to kind of speak in. So what we did, and this is what we encourage couples to do kind of in all, is like we did jump in full on into the church and we started serving and we started getting to know other couples who were serving. And then we just got to learn some of their stories and be able to see. And I was like praying, like asking God, like, show me who. And as I'm hearing, there was this one couple, you know, Perry and Jane, and we're watching them. They were serving with us in youth ministry. And I was like, man, this guy's got something different. Like, he's got the kind of marriage, he's got kids. As a parent, he's successful as an entrepreneur, but he's not like arrogant. I'm like, I respect this guy. And so I started pursuing him and asking him questions and all. And then I was like, hey, would you ever be open of us coming over and just asking you guys questions and just allowing us to be able to learn from you guys of what you've learned? And then they opened their home, and it wasn't this like formal mentoring relationship where we signed on a contract of when we were going to meet and what they just kind of opened up their lives and did everyday life with us.
Yeah.
And they were so generous of like, you know, hey, I'm going to go pick up a kid at basketball. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'll come with you. And then I asked questions. We were doing life together,
yeah,
right, in that way. But I think what's important is we as a couple had to initiate and pursue and bring a little bit of like the vision of and I guess the plan of like what we want to learn from them and all. And we had to kind of lead in that way. So I don't think I'm always very hesitant if a couple comes over. Almost every couple we've ever had come to us and are like, hey, we want to mentor you.
Hmm.
Doesn't usually end up going well, to be honest. Like, it's usually something that's more organic, but it's something like, hey, we want to learn this from you. And this relationship and friendship built, and you know, they're been in our corner for years now, just great godly friends, mm-hmm, and ones that we look up to and have learned from.
I think what's different nowadays that we didn't have, which could actually is a really good thing, but yeah, I hear so many people will just Google or YouTube whatever their problem is now, and so whereas that may not always be bad because you find some great people, right? Like Marriage After God. But like at the same time, we want to encourage couples of those are all great resources, but they're not meant to just fill you completely. So like you also need another couple that's like speaking in and having those conversations, because then you can dive more into your own story and how God's working in your unique marriage versus just the, you know, looking up online five ways to be a better husband or whatever it might be. And so our thing, like Mike said, is to pursue. Everybody wants to be invited. Nobody wants to do the inviting. And so I think you see in the church, and this is the gap we're trying to close, is you have youngers that want to be mentored, but they're waiting for them to come invite them. Like Mike said, like, hey, let us mentor you. And then you have the older ones that are looking at the younger and they're like, I don't know. I don't know if I have anything to offer. I got nothing to give and we're busy.
I love the time. Yeah.
If we can bridge that, like our most successful, I mean, here's the thing. We asked a few couples and God knows, because there were a few that were like, no, we don't have, like, we can't do that, you know? And one was like, well, I don't know. We could maybe do dinner in like a month. And I was like, what if we bring pizza and sit? And they're like, oh, you can come over tomorrow night. So I think it's also breaking down like what Mike said is people tend to think like that you want their full, like that this has to be an undivided, like you're just sitting and having a conversation for an hour straight, where like Mike said, they were raising their kids and we watched them parent. They'd be like, excuse me, I'm gonna have to go take care of that snarky remark that my 11-year-old just said, and they would walk away. And so we learned so much more because they just invited us into their life rather than them setting up moments where their kids were babysat and then they could just be with us.
So,
life on life, never go wrong.
Well, I love that. That's it reminds me, I could be wrong on this, and Mike, maybe you know better. You guys went to Bible colleges. Wasn't it the disciples in general, before Jesus came and called his disciples, wasn't it a disciple that would seek out a rabbi?
Yeah.
Wasn't that how it worked in the Jewish culture? It wasn't that the rabbi would go pick, you know, his disciples.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said about this, the pursuit of like, hey, I recognize I don't have all the answers. I recognize we're young and immature. I recognize that we have blind spots that we need help to see. I'm going to seek out someone that's older and wiser and has lived long. Doesn't mean they have degrees necessarily. Doesn't mean they're professionals, but people that I look at their life and I admire their life, that their example that they walk in, the way their children behave, the way they behave. I want that. I'm missing something that they have. And you, like you said, you've asked several people. And I think I would imagine the reason we probably don't reach out and we say, oh, I'm going to go ask someone is, first of all, it probably is a weird thing. It's nowadays it's very strange. It's like, hey, we just want to, you know, pick your brains on life.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, okay. maybe a fear of rejection of, of, no, we don't do that. And you're like, oh, I shouldn't have asked. Dang it. You know, and this fear, embarrassment or of rejection. But I like what you said, that consistency of, we're just going to keep, you know, pursuing. We know what we are looking for. We know what we want. We know what we desire. We know what God wants for us. And we're going to seek that out. The sad thing is this used to be how society was in general.
Yeah.
Like you know, the older women in the neighborhoods and the villages would help the younger women with having their babies and teaching them how to nurse and then teaching them how to raise. And then the older men would teach the men how to start their jobs. And we've lost that. We've lost the elders in our society. Mm-hmm. Not that they're gone. We've lost this connection between we're the younger generation. We respect and look up to the older generation because they've lived longer than us.
Yeah.
You know, how do I be a parent? They've been a parent longer. Doesn't mean they did it perfect, but they at least can help you figure out some things about, you know, how to cook meals, which took us years to figure out.
Yeah.
That's something that is, it's something that I've been praying about for our own church, you know, getting older couples, you know, we can't just go like, hey, you're old, come. But, you know, maybe we could actually. But trying to figure out a way of really inspiring that. It sounds like that was what inspired your guys' ministry. It sparked discipleship, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what Holly was talking about, this connection of the generations. So talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, just even from our own story, we were like, man, we saw God move and heal, and being the recipient of a relationship like Perry and Jane did to us, like allowed us, we almost felt like a responsibility to steward that well. And as we talked with lots of other couples, we saw like, oh man, this is a bigger deal. So for us, our vision is to help build thriving marriages, and those elements, that those mistakes that we made are literally the things that we try to help couples take steps forward in, is to be able to build that firm foundation in their marriage. Mm-hmm. And in the process of that, falling in love, having intimacy as a couple, but also discovering like what's the mission that God's called us as a couple to participate in, and to go and to make disciples, and to use our home as a place of hospitality for neighbors and for those that are hurting, and to be on mission for where we're at.
Mm-hmm. When we started Spark Discipleship, we had quickly been asked to come do a conference at a church in South Carolina with some friends of ours. And so we get there and we're super excited. This is our first big event. And on a Sunday morning, we give the announcement that the event's the next night and come join us. And afterwards, this sweet little old lady walks up to me. She was probably, I don't know, in her 80s. And mm-hmm. she was like, honey, I've been married for over 50 some years. I'm not really sure what you're going to teach me tomorrow night that I haven't already heard. And I look at her and I give her a smile and I go, you know what? You are absolutely right. I probably won't say anything you haven't heard before. But if you want to see how God is changing and transforming young people's marriages and hear about the healing power that he has, that he showed us and why we do this, I want to encourage you to come. And I was like, nailed it, right? And she looks at me and smiles and she goes, I'm still not coming, and walks away. And so like, I just, awesome. I love that.
That's why God, we need our older people.
Yeah. I love that God gave me that moment, because it was this like moment of the Lord saying, you're not doing this because you're qualified. Like, look back at the disciples. Like, Jesus called them. And then he equipped them with power. And
not many of you were of noble birth. Not many of you were wise.
Yeah. And so what I love about this space is we just get to come as our like authentic selves of like, we're figuring this thing out right now. And we just want to help other couples stumble through it and figure it out. And so when you put Jesus, we always say at the center, not first, because he should be at the center of everything we do. We've just watched his power transform mm-hmm. and heal. And that's why we can have the conversation we had at the beginning of this talk. And it doesn't affect me, because I've been healed by God's power and his grace and his love and made new. And so that's what we want couples to experience. So it's just been an exciting journey to just walk that road and show couples, especially those that are like broken. I'm a broken one. I'm like, well, you can stay there because I know what it's like to be comfortable there, or you can believe for more and watch God do miracles in your marriage.
We started our, ministry, quote unquote, marriage ministry barely 5 years after being married and barely coming out of like some really difficult stuff where we didn't want to be married anymore. But I always tell people, I'm like, we're not marriage experts. We're just sharing what God's teaching us as we go along this journey. Because, we haven't. One day we'll probably be experts on this thing called marriage, but I don't know when that is.
Yeah,
because we're still learning. It's one of the reasons I've been loving doing all these interviews. Is I'm still learning all the time, and as we're talking, I'm thinking, I probably need therapy. I have brokenness too, and not that therapy is the only answer for that, but it sometimes helps. But not just we're all learning, and qualification is such a funny word. Qualification in the kingdom is believing in Jesus and you know, claiming brotherhood or sisterhood in Christ, and but sanctification is a real thing too. And like you said, you know, stumbling through this thing and having other believers to walk with, I believe it's Ecclesiastes says, you know, two have a better return for their labor. Like it's better to walk with a partner than it is to walk alone, because if you fall in a ditch, how are you going to get out if there's no one there to help you out? And that's exactly what the church is meant to be, is that we're walking this road together, this narrow road, and we're going to trip and fall, and we need people there to pick us back up, and we need to be reminded of the truth every single day. And over again throughout the New Testament, and even in the Old Testament, there's this theme of remember and remind. Like, remind each other of the things that God has done. Remind each other of the day that's ahead of us, the day of glory, the day of redemption. Remind each other of the salvation we have. Remind each other of the scriptures, the truth. Sing hymns to each other and songs to each other, and pray for each other. And these are all of the, this is the main theme for the church, is how we're to walk with each other. There's not any believer that has it all figured out. Christ is the only sinless one. he's the one to be like.
That's like one of the core truths that we tell, that we teach are teaching our kids, but that we believe is like, worldlies are learners, and we're like lifelong learners. And my mom always said that growing up, and I didn't realize till later that like a learner is literally a disciple. So that was exactly eye-opening and all. But man, for us to be not just, we want to be lifelong learners of following Jesus, but also of each other in our marriage. Like we have changed dramatically over the last 16 years. Like I joke that I've been married to like 8 different Hollies, you know.
In all, great. All great versions.
All perfect.
But here's what's amazing about sanctification and growing in Christ is that we're becoming more and more like him in his image. So Holly's like great wine. She just gets better with age. She gets better with years. And I value her and I treasure her. But that's also like God working and refining and forming her more and more into her image and into his image. So I do wish like that was the story that was told earlier on, not like, oh, this is as best as it gets. Like, holy smokes. Then how is this going to happen? It's like, no.
Well, that's the truth that we believe. It's why most marriages end.
Totally.
And the truth is we're not who we're becoming yet. We're on that journey toward it. And you're right. Holly, I'm sure you'd say the same thing about Mike, that he's been different men throughout the years and all, you know, aging well and drawing closer to Christ. But the opposite could be true also. We could be getting, you know, moving away from Christ and transforming in a different way. But again, all the more reason why we need community and people to be like, hey, what are you doing?
Like, for sure.
You're going the wrong direction right now, friend. I love what you guys are doing. You have this ministry called Spark Discipleship, and your heart is to help marriages flourish by walking them through true church, true community, and then finding mentorship and discipleship, and then becoming that, correct?
Yeah.
You're trying to encourage them to become that.
Yep. That's like, you know, not to just be on the receiving end of that, but also then to walk in that. And that's what we call disciple making marriages. And those are marriages that know who they are, mm-hmm. know what they're called to, and they're on mission together to make disciples. And you're going to be, we're making disciples of our kids, right? Those are our first disciples. They're most important ones that we're making right now and all, but we're also available and asking God to bring others upon our path. You know, those persons of peace that we can love and serve and share the gospel with and disciple and teach them how to make disciples too.
Well, Mike Holly, I love what you guys are doing. I'm praising God that you're doing it, because we do need more disciple makers. We need to be reminded that our healthy marriages, or our pursuit of a healthy marriage, is not just so that we're happy, but it's so that we have healthy children, children who fear God, love God. But at the end of the day, also that we are a ministry to this world, that we're an example to those around us, that we can draw people up and point them to Christ with our lives and our words. So thank you for what you guys are doing. Where can people find you guys?
Yeah, it's sparkdiscipleship.com is the kind of our home base.
And can anyone sign up for that, or is it just something local?
No, it's global. So we've got, you know, not too long ago on our call with a couple in Germany and all. So it's, you know, global, and we just want to be here and available. We produce resources, you know, every week and all, to be able to help equip and encourage couples in learning to follow Jesus together.
Yeah.
Awesome. So as a blessing for all those who made it this far in the episode, congratulations. I'm just going to point out a few of the free resources that you guys have offered. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think these are all free. The 5 Practices of a Thriving Marriage.
Yep.
A Weekly Huddle Guide.
Yep.
And a Weekly Huddle Calendar.
Yep.
And then Investing Spiritually in Your Spouse.
Yeah.
Totally. These are all free guides that they can download on the site.
Yep. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll give you the links and everything. You can have that in the show notes and everything too, just to make it easy.
Awesome. Well, Mike Holly, thank you so much for taking the time to be on my show, and I appreciate you guys, and God bless you guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Aaron.